Lift up your heads, you gates. Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is he, this King of glory? The Lord Almighty, he is the King of glory. So says Psalm 24. It was 7:51 in the morning on January 12th in the year 2007. 7:51 in the morning. A young man wearing jeans, a t-shirt, and a Washington Nationals baseball hat began playing a violin in the Washington, D.C. subway station. He played for the next hour, performing six classical pieces. And then during that time, people counted, there was 1,097 people that passed by. Some even tossed money into his violin case to the tune of maybe $32.17. Of those 1,097 people, only seven even paused for longer than 60 seconds. Now, who was playing the violin in such a strange place? Well, it was Joshua Bell. He was a Grammy Award-winning violinist. Grammy Award-winning. And he had just earlier, days before, filled Boston Symphony Hall. And it was an experiment. And though Bell's talents typically command $1,000 a minute, that day in the subway station, he made $32.17 for an hour's worth of music. And you can't really fault his instrument that he was playing either. He was using a Stradivarius violin worth $3.5 million. And you can't fault the music either. Bell played a piece from Johann Sebastian Bach that was called one of the greatest achievements in any man in history. There were shoeshine stands on either side of Joshua Bell. People were buying lattes and lotto tickets. Besides, who had time to stop? Who could afford to be late to work? Not expecting majesty in the midst of the mundane. People missed it. Today, it's Christmas Day. A day filled with presents and parties and maybe pecan pie. And we hear the cacophony of choruses out in our world. Thank you so much. You shouldn't have. It just fits. We delight in the lyrics, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, or Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, or Grandma got run over by the reindeer. And under the holiday spell that we're still in, we counted it, and people shelled out over $460 billion this year on toys and turkeys and travel and tinsel and beautifully decorated trees. $460 billion. No wonder the stock market's going. But with all the hype and hoopla, it still today becomes easy for us to pass on by and forget and miss the real meaning of Christmas. It is so easy to miss it. Since his revelation on Mount Sinai, the Lord had lived in a mobile home called the Tabernacle. But now King David is moving the Ark of the Covenant from Gibeah to the capital city of Jerusalem. And soon a temple will be built for God. Now, for this occasion, David composes a song for himself. Also, Psalm 24, which I just read. Now we focus our attention on this psalm's last verse, which begins with a question and ends with a grand affirmation. Who is this King of glory? David writes, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of all armies, a Lord of power. He is the King of glory. Now, this was written way back in Old Testament times, and we know that Israel, God's people, had seen a lot of kings come and go. Abraham, in the Old Testament, encountered monarchs called Melchizedek and Abimelech. Moses and Aaron confronted Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joshua defeated Sihon, king of the Amorites, and Og, king of Bashan. And then the book of Judges tells us about Eglon, the king of Moab, and Jabin, the king of Canaan. We got all these different obscure names. And there's a king throughout it all. And who is this King of glory? It is the Lord of hosts coming to Jerusalem in, with, and under the Ark of the Covenant. He is the King of glory. But we know that, just like these obscure stories from the Bible, so often this king comes and we miss it. We miss it. In the baptismal flood that you and I were called out of darkness at the font, when we were called out of darkness into God's marvelous light, in the Eucharistic body and blood we're fed and nourished at this altar, God and has again and again delivered us and saved us and come to us. And yet we sometimes miss it. We don't always see God working, playing, making music. And why do you think that might be? It could be that we're not always present. But hear the word of the Lord from John. He says, "This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people love darkness. People love darkness instead of the light because their deeds were evil." Now, even us people who are churchy people, we still love darkness. From the best of us to the worst of us. We all love darkness and self-centered narcissism. We still live in a darkness of our own lives and our half-truths. When our clothes don't actually fit just right. Those gifts that we don't just love the most. We still long for more of that darkness that feeds our flesh. And the prince of darkness, Satan himself, mocks our feeble attempts of being disciples for God. He mocks our failed relationships. He mocks our failed attempts of good times of raising families. He mocks our fatal attractions. And despite it all, the King of Glory is still playing, still making music, still working behind the scenes of it all. And who is this King of Glory? We need to know. Oh, I think we need to know. And that's why David begins this psalm with the words, "The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein, for he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers." You see, this King of Glory is the King of creation. When he made the world, the Lord was a skilled engineer. He was building structures by driving pylons deep into the ground to establish a firm foundation, even in the midst of seas and rivers. We can go out and look at the world's architecture, and it's still solid. The world is still secure. The Lord made it so because, after all, he owns it. The earth is the Lord's, and he is still the King of glory. The psalm continues, "Who shall ascend to the hill of the Lord? Who shall stand in his holy place?" The questions are pretty significant. The King of glory calls for clean hands and a pure heart. He rejects what is false and deceitful. He wants every person to seek him, to seek the face of God. And these convicting words invite us to confess, repent, and humble ourselves before this King, to bow down to him. And then in the third movement of this song, Psalm 24 questions that they change. From who shall ascend to this hill, and who shall stand in his holy place, they change to this another important question. Who is this King of Glory? The people of God had multiple opportunities to get it right, to not miss it. And they failed time and time again. We can read about it all day long in the Bible, about failed people, failed relationships, and times that people just missed it. So the King of Glory continues to show himself for all of us who still live in darkness. And so, once more, the King of Glory would come. Not to Jerusalem, not to the people of Old Testament, but to Bethlehem. And not in the Ark of the Covenant or something grand and golden, but God would come in flesh and blood of a real person. For us men and for our salvation, he came down. In the silence of night, in the warmth of a candle, in the whisper of a baby. And this baby exchanged the robes of eternity for wool and swaddling clothes. He exchanged his golden throne for a dirty sheep pen. Worshipping angels singing, "Holy, holy, holy," from eternity, passed by and exchanged their cries of exclamation for the songs of lowly shepherds. Here is the majesty in the midst of the mundane, holiness in the filth of manure. The King of Glory comes in the world. On the floor of a stable, through the womb of a poor teenager, in the presence of a carpenter. Just like thousands of people may go by, a person with a baseball cap and jeans, sometimes it's easy to pass on by the world breaking in, by God breaking in. Jesus took on flesh and blood so that you could take this world and that he could take you into his arms to heal your hurts, to forgive your filth, and to bring light into your darkness. He took on flesh, not to demonstrate the innocence of infancy, but to live the life that you and I could not live. To die a death so that we don't have to. Jesus isn't some sort of assistant to God our Father. He's not like a vice president of the world, like a Mike Pence of the universe. Jesus isn't a junior partner to the Father, but he is the full-fledged member of the Godhead, equal with the Father in every way. And being with one substance with the Father, John says, through him all things were made. Paul proclaims he is the image of the invisible God. The Hebrew writer says Jesus is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of God. And there it is, Jesus. Who is this King of Glory? Who is there way back then? Who is here right now? Who is this King of Glory? It's Jesus. And sometimes we miss him. It was on the cross that Jesus, despite people walking by, is on the cross that Jesus fully disclosed the true glory of God. Any idea of divine glory needs to adjust to Jesus' willingness to humble himself to death, even death on a cross. So how do we know what God looks like? How do we know when true music is being made? Well, you don't need to look any further than the face of Christ. That's how we get to see God. On the cross is where we get to see the greatest love of all. On the cross is where we get to see the greatest point, the greatest reason for Christmas. The source of all truth is where we find Jesus on the cross. The source of all light, when for 3 hours he hangs in darkness. The source of life when he's crucified, died, and buried. Christmas time isn't always a sentimental time of syrupy love, but it's a fierce love for you. Driven by nails, marked with scars, crowned with thorns, sealed in holy baptism, and delivered to you right to now, today, at this Holy Supper, God still chooses to reveal himself to you in ordinary, plain ways. So don't miss it. Now, Art Holst is a man who is a veteran NFL referee. He tells about a Sunday, just like today, when Kansas City Chiefs tight end Fred Arbanas was tackled so hard that his artificial eye that he had, it popped out during the game. I can't even believe a football player with an artificial eye to begin with. But it popped out during the game. And soon the missing eye was found, somewhere on the turf. Arbanas popped it back into place and was eager to resume play. And Holst, the referee, then said to the player, playfully, "I'm encouraged with your courage there, Fred. But what would you have done if you had lost the other eye?" "Well, that's easy," snapped Arbanas. "I'd become a referee." You see, referees aren't the only ones who live in the dark. You and I still do. And fortunately for us, somebody came to shed some light in our dark world. So, don't miss it. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.